Every good rhyme starts with once upon a time. Long ago, far away, centuries before our day, humans lived, monsters roamed, both shared earth and sky as home. Yet this peace came undone, war was waged and humans won.
Welcome to Literary License Podcast, Book to Screen, Once Upon a Time episode, exploring children's classics whilst losing our innocence along the way.
Welcome to the Literary License Podcast. It's Book to Screen. We'll be discussing the book and the film version of it. And today we're doing Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary Wolfe and the film Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And before we get started, let's find out who's with us. We got Leandro Gazzi with us. Hello, Leandro.
Hi, how are you?
And I'm your host, Keith Shago. Unfortunately, Vicky Ray is not here due to illness, but we will see her very soon. So, Leandro, what have you been up to since last time we spoke to you?
Well, this past month I have been working a lot because a lady from where I work in a month she lost both parents, so we have been really busy. Then I haven't been training much. I need to go back. I have been working a bit for I work for a charity, so I have been trying to make some money for the charity while reading. Well, bought the book, I couldn't find it, so I have to buy it online. Then I finished reading it today and I watched a movie before doing the podcast. I have been, basically just that, not much apart from work. What about you?
Me? I'm settling into life in Dallas. It's a bit overwhelming, but, I'm finding my way there. And I'm also... TV is impressive. We'll see how that goes. But it's really weird. The application process is very strange. You put your application in, then you have to do all these tests for every single job. So I did those. I mean, I had scored very, very well.
What about the test? What do you have to do?
And I can't drive here at the moment because they don't accept my UK driver's license. So basically I'm Ubering everywhere at the moment to get to places. I mean, luckily all my interviews are online, so that's okay. But just a simple lack, to simple things. I'm Ubering here, there, and everywhere. I mean, a lot of stuff I do is I'm working from home, a lot of stuff. I'm still doing my freelance work because Nina's bringing stuff through to me. So that keeps the bills paid and stuff like that, so that's not a problem. But so I've done my preliminary driver's test, getting all my forms together so I can take my written test, and then I have to go to a driving school for 5 weeks, and then I can go and get my driver's license. So, and the thing is, I do have a car here ready to use. It's just sitting there in the sun, so I can't use it. I have to go out and start it every once in a while just to make sure that nothing goes wrong with the engine. So, but that's about it really. I've been watching some telly. There's a really good service here called Riku. And it's like, I'll never pay for another streaming service that has everything on it. Like it has this Movie Land app and it has all these movies on it for free and has Tubi's for free. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, why is anyone playing for apps in this country? So I'm really feeding off that a lot. And Boo made it over here finally. That was he was supposed to come over the next day. And when I got off the plane in Dallas, I get this text message said, he's not coming over, that he's sick and we need to euthanize him. We're going to kill him. I mean, it was like, and so So, and of course, I couldn't reach anyone because of the time difference. So I had to stay up until like 3 o'clock in the morning to reach London. So I called London and, you know, and finally got in touch with someone. Then the vet didn't know what I was talking about. The courier service finally got in touch with them. And they're going, oh, he's got congestive heart failure. He's got, you know, this and that and everything else. I go, have you tested him? No, we haven't tested him. I go, test him. I go, you can't kill my cat. I go, he's there all alone. I go, you know, you picked him up. You took him away. You said he was ready to go. And now it's this. I go, this is unfair. So anyway, they tested him. Nothing's wrong with him. He's fine. So he came a week later, showed up. He's hugely traumatized. I mean, the poor thing was having nightmares and everything for 2 days, but he's fine now. He's settled in now. He gets on with Micah, my sister's dog, and everything's fine now. But that was a bit thingy. So yeah, so it's a bit weird because on Monday, before we're leaving, everything was fine. Then Monday afternoon, everything started going awry. Like Ferris's visa, they lost his visa application. Then they said they couldn't accept it. So there was that. So we had to get him a ticket back home to Saudi Arabia so he could apply there, which, to be honest, is probably a good thing because he's able to see his family and do stuff with his friends that he wasn't able to do. So he did this final hike, you know, his final hiking. He did a CrossFit, came in third in Saudi Arabia for that. So he's able to do a lot of things. So in a way, it's a good, maybe it was for the best for him to close some chapters and stuff. Okay. So. And then today I'm going to go see a movie called American Dreamers with Peter Dinklage and Shirley MacLaine. And yeah, and just settling in with my sister. My brother and his family showed up last Wednesday. So I spent time with my 5-year-old nephews, which were really cute. They kept jumping on my bed saying Uncle Keith, so they would watch Batman with me and stuff. And so that was really fun. And then went back on Wednesday. So the house is a little bit emptier, but it was nice to start getting reacquainted with my family and start making up for some missing years. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
That's cool.
And on that note, that brings us to Who Censored Roger Rabbit, which is a fantasy mystery novel written by Gary K. Wolfe in 1981. It was later adapted by Disney and Amblin Entertainment into the critically acclaimed 1988 film Who Framed Roger Rabbit. What we're going to do is cut to the synopsis of Who Censored Roger Rabbit, and we'll be right back. This is the plot synopsis for Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary K. Wolfe. Eddie Valiant is a hard-boiled private eye, and Roger Rabbit is a second banana comic strip character. Roger hires Valiant to find out why his employers, the DeGreasy brothers, Rocco and Dominic, who are owners of a cartoon syndicate, have reneged on a promise to give Roger his own strip and potentially sell his contract to a mystery buyer. Evidence shows that there was no mystery buyer, and the reason Roger Rabbit remained in a secondary role was because of his lack of talent. Soon after, Roger's mysteriously murdered in his home. His speech balloon, found at the crime scene, indicates his murder was a way of censoring the star who apparently had just heard someone explain the source of his success. Valiant's search for the killers takes him to a variety of suspects, which includes Roger's estranged widow, Jessica Rabbit, Roger's former co-star, Baby Herman, and Roger's photographer, Carol Masters. Valiant then meets a doppelganger of Roger's and promises to solve the mystery of his death. At the same time, Roger's former boss, Rocco DeGreasy, is also murdered, and witnesses point to Roger as the killer, as he was allegedly seen fleeing the scene of the crime. While Valiant investigates, the key suspects ask him to be on the lookout for a certain kettle in exchange for a reward. He eventually finds the kettle, which was in Roger's possession, and gives it to Dominic, only to find out it is actually a magic lamp with a genie, who then kills Dominic. The genie explains its origins and that over thousands of years it has become embittered, not only granting wishes but a catch, and admits to being the one who shot Roger. He further explains that the words to command him happen to be part of a children's song that Roger habitually sings, and as such, Roger's wishes for success without actually realizing he had done so. When Roger accidentally activated the latrin a third time, but this time witnesses the apparition, the genie killed him. Valiant holds the genie hostage over a saltwater fish tank, saltwater being its weakness. The genie is then forced to grant a wish made by Valiant for proof of Roger's innocence, which is provided in the form of a suicide letter from Dominic confessing to both Roger and Rocco DeGrisi's murders, along with his own suicide. Not trusting the genie to keep his word of letting him go, and also knowing that no one would believe him about the genie, Valiant drops the genie's lamp into a fish tank and the salt water dissolves the genie. With Roger's murder disposed of, Valiant concludes that the DeGrisi murder was the original Roger Rabbit himself. Roger's motive was that Rocco had stolen Jessica from him, and he generated the doppelganger to be an alibi. He intended to plant the murder weapon at Valiant's office, making him the fall guy, but was shot by the genie when he accidentally summoned it. The doppelganger confirms the truth and confesses that he had it planned for days. However, for clearing his name and befriending him despite what he did and tried to do afterwards, he praised Valiant for his morals, calling him a real stand-up guy. Roger gives Valiant a final heartfelt goodbye before disintegrating. And that was the plot synopsis for Who Centered Roger Rabbit? Now back to the show. Welcome back to the Literary License Podcast. We're discussing Who Censored Roger Rabbit. So, Leandro, what are your thoughts of the book?
Well, first, I was impressed because it was really easy to read. The chapters are not really long. They're short. Some chapters are maybe one page. So... And I started to read it, I think it was last week.
Uh-huh.
And then yesterday I thought, well, I think about nearly chapter maybe 16, something like that. And I thought, okay, I need to hurry up. And I was able to finish in time, even have time to watch the movie. So I really enjoy the story, how it's written. I imagine it must be really hard to explain what is going on. For example, he explained in the book, right? When a cartoon is talking and appear that bubble,
uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was really clever the way he described it, like a kind of like something was appearing, then was disintegrating in the air and leaving like a patch of ash on the floor. So it was really cool because the description is really graphic in that way. Of course, it was really hard to, when he was describing Jessica Rabbit, not to think in this one, you know, the one in the movie, because we have that image. So it's yeah. You know, that's a thing that but anyway, it was really easy to figure what was going on. I can't find it now. I wrote it down in a piece of paper when I read it, but then I went to check it again when I finished the book and I couldn't find it. But it was really interesting because in one of the pages I was reading about, and then the character was saying something about politics.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I don't know, then I have this, you know, it's like, oh, hold on. Is this the character saying that about politics, or maybe it's the author putting his idea through? Right? Uh-huh. And it was really interesting was saying, it was something about politics. I can't remember now what it was, but I really like that. You know, like, of course, if the book is written by a person, it's the idea of someone, right? But, you know, I don't know, I think you know what I mean. When you can say, okay, hold on, this is the idea of just of the character, or there's something more deep in this just little phrase. So that was really, like, interesting. I really like it. Then the story, I really enjoyed it. There was one part that I was saying, oh, come on, go on. You know, I want to know what's going on. It was like too much of like, okay, I'm going there, and then I'm going there, and then I'm going there, and then I'm going there. And then it was divided by two because while he was going somewhere, Roger was then telling him that he has gone and see someone. I really enjoyed it. The story how was like they were making duplicates, negatives of the movies, and with that they were trying to frame different people, not just Roger Rabbit and but not him, but it's like it was Jessica and other people involved too.
Oh.
And I do really liked how everything at the end turned around, and then you discover who killed him in a way that nobody, well, at least not me, when I was reading the book, I thought, well, this is really happening. It was like, so that was really interesting. But also I have this feeling like, this is weird. This is really, really true. Or it's like, you didn't know how to finish the book. And I thought, okay, I have this idea that this is not, that the kettle was not a kettle, was like a lamp. And then with that, he was able to, boom, round it and finish the story. You know what I mean? I was feeling like...
I mean, it's quite... Weird. I mean, as I kind of took it, it's like... I love the idea that it's they're comic strips, first of all. Which, you know, when we get to the movie, we'll get to that. But, and I quite like the idea that, you know... And then you have, like, these comic strips appearing, you know, with... You know, you get, like... Dick Tracy and Snoopy and Dagwood and Blondie and Bumps the Beetle Bailey and Hagar the Horrible. And it all takes place in the 1980s, which is quite interesting as well. So you have a lot of the 1980s stuff going on in the background, you know, with Reaganomics and stuff like that, which I quite liked. But so you kind of, but I also like the idea that you're kind of seeing everything from Valiant's point of view. So you never really spend time with Roger Rabbit unless Valiant spends time with Roger. Yeah. And then the thing about the doppelganger and everything and there. But then so you're kind of reading it. It's interesting. It is going back and forth. You're watching it. It's like reading a detective novel and you're finding out how they're solving this case. And I quite like that. But then I have to say the last 10% of the book, because I read it on a Kindle, so therefore 10%. So I would probably say the last 25 to 50 pages, it goes really fast. And it's like, all
those. That's why I was confused, because I thought, well, hold on. In 20 pages, you saw that, all that, like 100. And then it's like, and not like in a kind of like rational way, because this was a crime. You bring another thing that is okay because I like it, right? Because it's a tune story. So everything can happen. If you're mixing in the same hour life, a cartoon life, why not bring this thing? It was really clever. I like it how he did it. But at the same time, I said, well, hold on, but it's a crime and it's like everything, you know. I like it how he put it all together. The end, it was like, for me, was like really sad.
Yeah, because Roger dies and it's Roger's doppelganger. And it's like, but the thing is, Roger's also, I mean, he killed somebody.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So he had a doppelganger be his alibi, like,
yes,
an alibi. Because, and then, yeah, but that in classic, you know, cartoon way, the genie, yeah, you know, ends up killing him. So there's doppelganger left.
Yeah, what I like was like, well, Roger was dead, and what we were seeing, it wasn't Roger. It was like a kind of like, has a name, but I can't remember the word.
A doppelganger.
Yeah, like something that he created was him, but not him. And it was really clever how at the end he's telling you, like, well, the idea was that Roger was to frame the inspector and make that, he turn it into like he have something connected in the crime too, and he get out. But he couldn't make it happen. So that, I really like it, because at the end, Roger was able to see, well, not Roger, but that ghost, I don't know the name, to understand that the man was a really good man, right? Yeah. And he was in the wrong, and he asked, like, he said, sorry. So that part, I really, really like it. Even the inspector, he was able to be one step ahead and solve the case without ending him in solve the case, you know, like being like pulled in.
I mean, another thing I kind of, Jessica Rabbit, and for me, is just like, I mean, she's like plays both sides of the coin all the time. So, but the thing is, she never really gets her just dessert. So in the end, you don't really know if she was in love with Roger or she wasn't.
No, she wasn't.
You know, and so she was just using him, but then she was using everyone. So she uses everyone around her. But at the same time, she does not have to pay any price for that.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's kind of like, and it's quite sad because Roger really, really loves her. And it's just like, and he's like trying so hard to stay in love with her. And well, it's kind of heartbreaking, actually, because.
Yes, but in a way, I was feeling like that to a point when they explained everything. And then he understands what happened with the genie. And he's like, okay, he was able to ask for a wish. And his wish was that she loved him, and it worked, but it worked just for a year. And after the year, and then she was able to say, look, no, I never love you, because what she felt was like a charm. It was not her real feelings. I think she was in love with the son of the owner of the company. I can't remember the name now. The one that she was studying in the university.
Yeah, I think she was into anyone who can get her ahead. It's all who could hit her head. But I mean, it's kind of funny because we'll get to the film later, but it's quite a gritty, dark novel, really.
Yes.
And that thing is, though, after I finished reading it, there are sequels to it. I think the next book is like Who Plugged Roger Rabbit is the next book. I'm actually quite keen. I'm going to actually start reading them because I really like the story a lot. I really like the way that it unfolded. I like Valiant's character. I like that he's kind of just hard-edged Columbo kind of guy. And I like that. And how he kind of puts up with the tunes. And I like that world of the comic strip and how they do the comic strip. You know, the simple fact that, you know, you have all these people involved, and it's like everyone's a suspect, and I like that. And the way that they do the comic strips is that they take pictures and they use the pictures for the comic strip. Like I have to say, with Gary K. Wolf, my hat goes off to him, because he was able to realize the world that seemed real to me. It could be real, and he kind of wish it was real. It would have been great if all this really happened, and like, this is the way life works. Like, you're in California and you had like all these, you know, tunes rocking around, and you know, and you know, like, and I, you know, I think what really kind of summed it up is when Dick Tracy's there, and how all the policemen love Dick Tracy, and they're wanting his autograph, all the humans want his autograph, and he's so well respected, and he meets him and is like, oh, you know, he's like starstruck over Dick Tracy, and you know, but then you also think that, you know, cartoon characters in animation, whether it's Snoopy, Charlie Brown, or, you know, Charlie Brown doesn't, but Snoopy makes a brief appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all drawn a certain way. So another way, you're kind of thinking like, well, if they're walking around, you know, I mean, something like if any of our listeners are familiar with Dick Tracy, those villains are quite ugly. I mean, they're just really weird looking, the villains that were in the Dick Tracy comic strips. And you're thinking, are these people like walking around, these really weird looking people, or these animal hybrids walking around? You know, like Snoopy walking around with Woodstock, it'd be like quite cool. So
I agree with you that it's really like, this one is really the story is really dark, because I think we are all used to, well, not now, but probably at the time that is set, the cartoons were like more like for kids. They were like more naive, they were like more like, this is more dark. There's like Jessica was doing like kind of like porn, and all that thing that is more like connected, I think, with humans, grown ups.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I don't think you could really do a porn in a children's book.
Yeah. And but the thing is, like, it was cool because even in the tunes, they were saying that they were like different types. We were like humans. I think we're called humanoids. Like Jessica Rabbit, and then you have the one that are like pets.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they have feelings as a human. So it was a bit like mixed in that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah. The thing is like, as you were saying, the end of the book is sad. I mean, I don't know how Roger Rabbit's coming back or stuff like this. Because to be honest, when the genie showed up, and that basically it's like, you know, he's going to get one last wish before they, you know, basically dissolve him in salt water, which will kill him. I really thought that they would find a way to bring him back to life. But
yes, I was thinking the same.
But it's like to prove his innocence. And then, you know, and then him and Valiant have like this tearful goodbye, and then he just pops and that's it. And that was just really, really sad. I mean, I don't know how they bring him back for the sequels, which I'll find out when I start reading the book.
I don't know. And he was really sad because he tried to extend his hand to shake it and disintegrated, and then did it with the other one. And then it was all, I don't know. I think was like sad. And I wish, I know that we're going to talk about the movie later, but I wish they made a remake of this movie.
Yeah.
The technology that we have these days, but with the story according to the book.
Yeah, because I think the book story, which I think is a lot stronger than the film, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But yeah, I think it's a book that everyone should read. I think it's a book that's kind of been overshadowed by the film, which is kind of a shame, because this is one of those books I always wanted to read because I realized it was based on a book, but I had it downloaded for ages and I never really got around to it. But now that I got around to it, I'm glad I actually read it. I think it's fantastic. And I guess on that note, maybe we should rate it. So how many stars would you give Who Censored Roger Rabbit?
4. I mean, it was really good. Didn't touch me so much, like, to make me, like, cry, you know, like, touch the power. Yes, the end. The end, it was so well described that I could picture it myself. It's hard to explain, you know, when you have the idea in your head. But I see Roger Rabbit, in, like, disintegrating, like, it's, that sequence, I saw it, like, really vividly. So, yeah, so I would say 4. What about you?
I'm going to give it a solid 5. And the reason why I'm going to give it a solid 5, because I really love the mystery behind it. I love the solving of the crime and how they solved it. And I liked all the suspect characters in it. And it really urged me to read more. And I was enjoying reading it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
It does wander a little bit, but I didn't quite mind, because when it did wander, it kind of brought up some more about this world. So in a way, it's like I quite enjoyed this world.
Mm.
And I was really sad at the end of it. I was like, oh, and I was like, and it kind of left me. And I kind of like, after finished reading it, I was kind of left with this real, I like this weird sadness, like, oh, you know, like, and I didn't want to.
I have the same, because even a bit earlier that the book is over, he said that he was disintegrating. So he came back from the street and he found Roger with all tape in his hands, and he was trying to put the parts back, even though he knew they were all disintegrated. And then he said, "Well," he said, "just leave it like that. I'm disintegrated." And said, "No, mates help each other." So, and even at that point, he knew that Roger has done all this, because he said, "Look, they found the fingerprints in the gun. You have been in that place at that moment, so it was impossible that it hasn't been you." And actually, he killed that man. Wow. So,
I mean, it's, you know, another thing is, I respect the ending a lot, because it does make sense. And, you know, and I'm kind of glad that he didn't tie a thing on to the end just to make him alive, you know, that he lived. You know, the doppelganger is going to live forever or whatever. So I do respect that, but at the same time, I kind of wish that happened, but I'm kind of glad that it didn't happen. This is really weird, you know?
Yeah, because at the same time, it's like no one except the investigator, everyone has their hands dirty, you know? Yeah. If one has not killed the other, didn't kill that person, but killed another one. So it was like all of them were like...
Everyone was guilty of something. And I quite love that, because I like the idea that there was no... It was all shades of gray, and that's what I quite like. Everyone was a shade of gray. And I think another reason why I'm giving it a 5 also is that I love how I love the Valiant and Roger Rabbit relationship, and how it's like he was annoyed by him, but by the end of it, they
it's
had
like a brother. Yeah, yeah, it's like
you know, it's like a romantic comedy, and I mean, in a way, you know, like they hate each other, but by the end, they really love each other. It's not quite like that. So, and you see it coming, and you know, and the excitement that Roger is when Roger decides that he's going to be a detective and does that. And I love the idea when he comes in as his Aunt May. That was funny. But it goes to his own funeral, and there's so many different things in this book that I can't. Could it have gone a bit faster? Maybe, but at the same time, I really, really enjoyed this world. So, and I am going to definitely start reading the other ones. I have downloaded all the other ones just to start reading, so. Well, this brings us to the film Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a 1988 American fantasy comedy film directed by Robert Zemeckis from a screenplay written by Jerry Price and Peter S. Seaman. It is loosely based on the 1981 novel Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary K. Wolf. The film stars Bob Hoskins, Christopher Lloyd, Stubby K., Joanna Cassidy, and the voices of Charles Fleischer and an uncredited Kathleen Turner as Jessica Rabbit. Combining live action and animation, the film was set in an alternative history Hollywood in 1947, where humans and cartoon characters referred to as toons coexist. Its plot follows Eddie Valiant, a private investigator with a grudge against toons, who must help exonerate Roger Rabbit, a toon framed for murder. Walt Disney Pictures purchased the film rights for the story in 1981. Price and Seaman wrote two drafts of the script before Disney bought in executive producer Steven Spielberg and his production company, Amblin Entertainment. Zemeckis was bought in to direct, and Canadian animator Richard Williams was hired to supervise the animation sequences. Product was moved from Los Angeles to L Street Studios in England to accommodate Williams and his group of animators. While filming, the production budget rapidly expanded and the shooting schedule ran longer than expected. Who Framed Roger Rabbit was released to Disney Touchstone Pictures, bannered in the United States on June 22, 1988. The film received critical acclaim for its visuals, humor, writing, performances, and groundbreaking combination of live action and animation. It grossed over $351 million worldwide, becoming the second highest grossing film of 1988 behind Rain Man. It brought a renewed interest in the golden age of American animation, spearheading modern American animation and the Disney Renaissance. It won three Academy Awards for Best Film Editing, Best Sound Effects Editing, and Best Visual Effects, and received a Special Achievement Academy Award for Williams Animation Direction. In 2016, the film was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. What we're going to do is cut to the trailer of Who Framed Roger Rabbit and be right back.
Mommy's going to the beauty parlor, darling. But I'm leaving you with your favorite friend, Roger. He's going to take very, very good care of you. Because if he doesn't, he's going back to the science lab.
Cut, 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 cut!
What the hell was wrong with that take?
Nothing with you, baby Herman. You were great. You were perfect. You were better than perfect. Just Roger. He keeps blowing his lines.
Roger.
What's this?
A tweeting bird.
Tweeting bird. Roger, read the script. Look what it says. It says rabbit gets clunked. Rabbit sees stars. Not birds. Stars! Can we lose the playback, please?
Roger, you're killing me. Killing me.
For crying out loud, Roger. How many times do we have to do this damn scene? Raoul, I'll be in my trailer. Taking a nap.
Excuse me,
please, Toots. Raoul, I can give you stars. Just drop the refrigerator in my head one more time.
Roger, I dropped it on your head 23 times already.
I can take it. Don't worry about me.
I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about the refrigerator.
This is the tale of an up-and-coming movie star named Roger Rabbit and a down-and-out private detective.
Stay out!
Named Eddie Valiant.
Ooga booga.
Every moment they were together. Was a new adventure in trouble.
Hide me, Eddie! Please!
It's a motion picture about friendship.
Eddie, make it easy, will ya? Please, Eddie!
Don't tell me how you're making a big mistake!
Love. Compassion.
All right, I'm sorry I yanked your ears.
All the time you yanked my ears?
Murder.
Marvin Acme. The
rabbit cacked him last night.
Remember, you never saw me.
Sex.
I'd do anything for my husband, Mr. Valiant. Anything.
And violence.
Tunes gets him every time.
You wouldn't have any idea where the rabbit might be.
Got a thing for rabbits, huh?
The whole thing stinks like yesterday's diapers.
It's a comedy a little different from all the rest.
I'm a pig!
I'm a toon!
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
But tell me, Eddie. Is that a rabbit in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
Touchstone Pictures and Steven Spielberg present a Robert Zemeckis film.
We toons may act idiotic, but we're not stupid.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Hello, welcome back to the Literary Lessons Podcast, and we're discussing Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So, Leander, what are your thoughts of the film?
Well, I have been trying to watch this movie for ages. I'm not lying. Since I was probably 9 years old, maybe 10, I don't know. And it was always happening the same. I was falling asleep, or I was finding it on the TV, but has just started, so I didn't want to watch it because it was not from the beginning. So today I have the opportunity to watch it fully, and I realized what I could remember from the movie was like nothing, little parts from the beginning, and that's all. Of course, seeing it with the eyes of me now being 39, right? Mm-hmm. You realize there's some jokes, there's some things that's going on that are not for kids whatsoever, right? Like when he have Roger himself the jacket and then he push it on the up and then comes from down looking up like he got a boner, and that was like fun. Or they were like, the detective was jumping on a train, and then there were two kids that offer him cigarettes, and probably the kids are like 8 years old, nine. Well, I like the story, but it's nothing. I mean, has few connections with the book, but I would say like maybe just like the skeleton, but the rest is nothing connected. I mean, in the book, Jessica tells at the end that she was never in love with Roger Rabbit. In this one, they are a solid couple.
Yeah.
Then the problem in the movie is like that there's a man who left a will for all the Acme company, and in the book, they own their
town, so it doesn't belong to anything.
Yeah. Then appears, I don't know the name of this actor, is the dog from Back to the Future.
Christopher Lloyd.
He appears and he's like a cop, and in the book there is a police officer, yeah, that is trying to solve the case, but this one is different because it's like a toon. So it's like,
he wants to expand because he wants to take over Toontown.
Yes.
So he can have his trolley car service. And
yes.
Like,
so like, it's like nothing connected with the story, original story. So it's like, okay, I was thinking, well, it's going to be hard to compare two things that are like different. I cannot even compare them because yes, some parts, but even for example, in the story, the detective hates Toons because a toon killed his brother. Mm-hmm. In the book, nothing happens like that. Like, there's no.
Well, I think the only, I guess it makes sense to make them animations because that would work better in a film than the comic strip. So I understand that side of it. And another thing is, it also gives us, the film gives us like Bugs Bunny, like Donald Duck and Daffy Duck together, and you get Betty Boop, and you get all the animation cartoons, you know, the classic ones, you know, like all the Bugs Bunny characters, and you have like the Fantasia, the Disney characters coming in, and you get Snow White playing. And so that makes a lot of sense. I understand that bit of it. I think the only thing that sticks true to the book is the Valiant and Roger Rabbit relationship, because you have the annoyance, and then they have this, they get each other by the end of it. But there's no doppelganger Roger Rabbit. There's only Roger Rabbit.
And And another difference is, like, in the movie, Roger is not trying to solve the case. Actually, he's trying all the time to hide from the police, but let's say, whether in the book, Roger is, it takes a part and says, no, I want to work with you. I want to be your helper. I want to investigate the same as you do and follow your step. And it, sorry, I forgot to tell you, it's a really nice part when the detective gave him a pin, like a condecoration, because he was doing like a job, a really cool job. This is in the book. In the movie, now it's like they're trying to escape all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that it's a bad movie. I think the movie is really good, and the job that they have done with the visual effects are amazing for that time.
I have to sit there and say that I saw the movie when it came out. I loved the movie. I still love the movie. But I'm glad I didn't read the book first and then see the movie, because I think I might have been highly disappointed.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's how, I'm not hugely disappointed, but I think, well, hold on, this is not accurate. This is not the same story.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I have to sit there and say the casting of this film is excellent. Bob Hoskins. I mean, when I was going, when I was doing some of my research, I mean, the Bob Hoskins first, the Valiant character, I mean, they offered Harrison Ford, but his price was too high. Then Chevy Chase, but he was not interested. Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Robin Williams, Robert Redford, Jack Nicholson, Sylvester Stallone, Edward James Olmos, Wallace Shawn, Ed Harris, and Charles Grodin, and Don Lane were all considered for the role. But I could sit there and say that there's no one better for this role than Bob Hoskins. Because if you see what he has to do, he's basically doing his role against nothing. If he's getting hit, he's being hit by nothing. And of course, they're putting all that stuff in. And he does a fantastic job, because you believe that he does live in this world.
Yes.
So the movie, I mean, if you think of this was like, special effects to the nth degree. So it's a special effects movie. I don't think you'll ever see anything better, because the scenes between the humans and the toons are so flawless. And that was fantastic.
Yes.
But then you get the role of Christopher Lloyd. And Tim Curry was originally put down for it, but they found them too terrifying. So then they tried Christopher Lee, who turned it down, then John Cleese, Peter O'Toole, F. Murray Abraham, Roddy McDowall, Eddie Deegan. Sting was also considered for a role before they settled on Christopher Lloyd, which, again, ended up being a perfect choice. What's quite funny, though, is that when you read about the making of it, is that when Bob Hoskins was doing the role, the voice of Roger Rabbit, which is Charles Fleischer, would dress as Roger Rabbit and stand behind the camera and do his lines to him. Roger Rabbit, which I kind of wish there were like pictures of that happening, but what I also like about it is that they got all the original voice actors from these animations. So the original voice of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and so on and so forth, they are the original voice actors for those roles, and they brought them in. The thing is that they wanted to redo this. Now these voice actors are dead now, they've long gone.
No, but they have the computers.
So. Yeah, but I'm saying that they wouldn't be able to have the voice actors.
Yeah, I know what you mean. For where the time it was made, have the original voices is another plus. I really like, I imagine that probably maybe today they could do the remake of this movie with, but it will be for adults. And now it could work.
But I think so. I mean, I think now there's more of an adult appreciation for animation now. Anyway, yes. This time,
it was hard because they have to mix. It was more for the family, but at the same time has some details that when Jessica Rabbit is dancing and all sexy or like that.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about it is that Amy Irving does the singing voice of Jessica Rabbit, and it's Kathleen Turner. Who has that very sexy voice. I mean, Kathleen Turner was Sex on a Stick back in the 80s, Body Heat and Peggy Sue Got Married and Serial Mom, so on and so forth. So that's perfect casting. But I love the way that she was drawn. I mean, there's such simple things, like when she's singing and she goes through and she grabs Eddie Valiant's tie and it goes through her animated hand and things like that. You're thinking, this is, incredible yeah. how done yeah, all yeah. that. And
one and thing that I didn't well. Like was that the I can't remember the investigator, the name.
Eddie Valiant.
Yeah, Eddie Valiant. In the movie, he's a person that is really angry all the time, like shouting, like with bad well, temper. And in the book, he wasn't like that.
Well, I think in the movie, because they gave him the story that he's against Toon because a Toon killed his brother.
Yes.
So you kind of have this. So I can understand why he would be angry and take, you know, and with him taking this case. And, you know, yeah. he's down his luck. He's an alcoholic. I mean, they're both alcoholics in the book, but he's more of an out. He seems like he's more of an alcoholic in the movie than he is in the book.
Yes. In the book, he was drinking, but I think he wasn't an alcoholic.
Yeah. And maybe, and I don't know, maybe it's because. Maybe because when you see something visual like that, maybe it stands out more than in a book situation. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, I also have to take my hands off is that, you know, with the tunes in the real world, it works extremely well. But when Eddie Valiant goes to Toontown, it worked really well as well, because we're going to be covering a couple films for part, you know, on a part two when our dark families were covering Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Which we kind of have the scene where Angela Lansbury appears in this cartoon world.
I have that movie to here to watch. Mm-hmm. Probably I would watch it tonight.
And then we're doing Enchanted as well under Dark Families as well. So those are the two movies we're dealing with, which deals with animation and live. So this is the month where it's kind of doing this world where live action mixes with animation. So, but you know, but when he goes to Toontown, it works flawlessly as well, because normally what happens, like if you've seen Mary Poppins and, you know, you get these people in this Toon world,
yes.
it kind of looks a bit flat. We just look very 3D and very well incorporated. So my hat goes off to the special effects in this movie. The movie, you know, I do like the movie. There are places where the movie kind of slows down a little bit.
Yes.
But I'm kind of wondering, like, I think for the book, you're kind of like involved in this world and you're kind of totally encased in this world. But the movie, you're watching the movie and it's very, very enjoyable. And when all these other characters that you grew up with as a child and seeing all these, and they start appearing, you get this delight in watching them appear.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, are we more wowed by the special effects and how they do the movie than we are with the story, because the story is actually richer in the book than here.
Yes.
So this is very much, you know, I think the movie relies a lot on these special Toon characters coming to life in this world in the movie, where in the book, I think that the Toon characters feel they're more integrated, but at the same time, you know, even though the worlds consist, they just consist together. They just coexist with each other. In the movie, it seems more of a plot device about how much they exist. And, you know, it's about like showing off the special effects and showing off everything.
Yes.
And getting the glee of seeing the character. So,
and also I was thinking, well, is you have Disney plus another company. So I can see like how Disney is trying to all try to fight all the time to put the characters, and they have so many characters that they're even if you have a scene of people walking down the street, you will have a character walking on the back, you know, just to put it on. As you said, it's really, really well done. There's one part when there is the hippopotamus from Fantasy. I think it's called Fantasy. No, it's not called Fantasy. Well, you will tell me the name. She's on the street and she sat down on a bench, and the man that was sitting on the bench goes up. And it was really funny because my DVD player is working but then stopped for moments. And in that moment it froze, and you could see how the hippopotamus was overlapped to the human. And it was really clear, because if the DVD hasn't, the movie hasn't stopped for a second, you wouldn't see it, because it's so quickly that your eye don't catch it. But if you watch it like scene by scene, you will see that it's like, for example, oh, there is a hand there, then there is a hand in 2 millimeters away. Yeah, it was really, really cool. I think that what they try, I was thinking maybe what they try to do is like, as in the book, you have the genie that appear from the, what's the name?
The lamp.
The kettle, the lamp. In this movie, they tried to create this character that was like a kind of like a toon cop that was trying to do what he wanted. Because he, in the book, the genie was like kind of like fed up of giving three wishes to people and wanted to do something for himself. Mm-hmm. So he started to change the condition of the wish. Instead of giving you a wish like round, he will give you a wish, but in a year's time, everything will decline. So it was like kind of like so.
I also think that maybe in the 80s, there was a huge thing about gentrification areas, taking you know, poor areas and taking the people and moving them and taking an area and reviving it. So I think that's probably where that storyline came through. It's like, you know, let's get rid of all these people and revive it. But if you start thinking of the story, the problem with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if you start thinking about it too deeply, the question is, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because at the end of the day, these toon films that in 1947 were huge. All these characters were huge. They were, you know, Mickey Mouse was a star. Bugs Bunny is a star. Fantasia is a star. Snow White is, you know, the biggest naming movie. So the question about how they would let someone do that is questionable, because at the end of the day, if you know, the thing is, if they did it like, if it was set in the 80s, what you would have is that, I mean, animation was dead in the 80s. You know, of course, this would lead to the Renaissance. This would lead to Disney doing Little Mermaid and what followed after that.
Yeah.
If this movie wasn't made, that Renaissance would never have happened. So it would have made more sense maybe to set this in the 80s. So you would get rid of all these toon characters because they're not making money. They're not hits anymore. They're just, you know, I mean, let's face it, Bugs Bunny is, you know, there was no new Bugs Bunny cartoons or anything. It was just, we grew up on stuff that was made decades before. And that's what we grew up on, these reruns. I mean, we did have cartoons when we were growing up, but they weren't these huge stars like they are today. I mean, you know, after Who Framed Roger Rabbit, then the Disney Renaissance happened in 89 and onwards, what we got is that this love of animation, you know, Teenage Ninja Turtles is huge, and He-Man and all these things, and they keep coming back over and over and over. But up until that point, they would never have come back. So it would have made more sense to want to get rid of Toontown and have kind of everyone supporting that, for the simple fact they weren't money makers by that time. Where in 1947, all these characters, so like, what, they're going to wipe off? Hollywood's more than willing to like sell off this Toontown for the simple fact that they would. For what? So they're not going to have any more toon cartoons that were making money. So when you start thinking things too deeply, there are parts of this movie that do kind of fall to the wayside as far as plot points are concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. But saying that, I love the weasels. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think Christopher Lloyd was brilliant. I can't fault any of the casting whatsoever. The casting is spot on. You know, when you read through the list of people that they were considering, I'm kind of glad that they went in the direction that they weren't, because Bob Hoskins was not a huge star. He did a lot of English movies and stuff like that. He was an English star. And Chris Lloyd, okay, I know he came off of Back to the Future, but he's always just kind of a character actor, you know, and then Joanna Cassidy, again, is the waitress, the red-haired waitress. She's fantastic. So I can't, and even like the secondary characters you have in the background, everything is so perfectly cast and so perfectly done that, you know, if they were to remake the movie version and make it like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you know, let's remake the movie, I don't think that there'd be anyone that they could put in those roles to do that. If they did the movie,
I think that Jessica Rabbit could be Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it would have to be the voice, because Angelina Jolie is very beautiful, but she would. I think why Kathleen Turner does it, because Kathleen Turner has a really sexy voice.
Yeah.
No, Angelina Jolie would be able to do that. There's possible that she would be able to do that. The thing is, though, when I'm thinking of Angelina Jolie, I can't remember what her voice sounds like. It's kind of weird. I just see the look of her.
Check Maleficent.
Oh yeah, precisely. Yeah. So she probably would be.
Either good. Well.
But then again, what kind of amazes me is that the movie made so much money that there never was a sequel.
Yeah. But then
it was a very expensive movie to make. But I do remember though that after Roger Rabbit became a huge hit, then what you do is you go to the movies and there'd be Roger Rabbit and Baby Herman shorts, animated shorts that they would put on before movies, like in front of like Steven Spielberg movies and stuff like that. So that was quite nice. And if you have the Blu-ray or the DVD of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, it does have those shorts on there, which they were really
good. I'm going to watch them when
we... They're really good.
I hate that baby.
Baby Herman. Like
it. No, doesn't look sweet. And then when it turns into it's a grown up, it's even disgusting, even worse.
But you know, the funny thing about it is that I think the model Baby Herman is what they would use for Puss in Boots. Because you know, like on when Baby Herman's like trying to look like really innocent and he's like really cute. And then
and he's an old man.
Yeah. I do find it also interesting that there's apparently only a couple lines that they use from the book that they actually reuse in the movie.
Well,
and that is Baby Herman saying, "I got a 50-year-old lust and a 3-year-old dinky." And Jessica Rabbit saying, "I'm not bad, Mr. Valiant. I was just drawn that way." And I think, you know, using those two lines from the actual, I mean, they're classic lines. So that was quite smart. But yeah, I mean, I can't really fault the movie. I really do enjoy the movie. But compared to the book, I think the movie suffers a little bit because the book is a far superior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, so I do like that. Sorry for my sister's dog in the background for those listening.
Really.
Hopefully I might be able to censor him out of it. But he has a barking collar that I can put on this that refrains him from barking, but I always feel a bit guilty when he has that on there. So, well, I guess what we should do maybe is let's rate Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So how many stars do you give Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Again, I'm going to give this a 5.
But it's really hard.
Doing the film on a standalone basis, I'm going to give it a 5. If I'm going to compare it next to the book, I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah, it's really hard because visually talking is amazing. It's a 5. No, there's nothing to debate. Story talking is hard because I cannot even compare it. So that's why I put a 3. Mm. So 3 for the story, 5 for the visual effects. There's someone waiting there for you. She wants to rate the movie.
I have an iPad and Micah is very short. So every time he gets off the bed and wants to come back on, you have to lift him up on it. So what he does, he keeps trying to jump up. So he just gets his little head popping up at the end of the bed, trying to pop in. So that's the case.
The
wondering what we're laughing at. So,
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, you know, I think I'm giving it a 5 because... And he really loved it. He thought this is brilliant. So I'm kind of dealing it with the way he saw it because he didn't read the book. So I'm kind of kept it to more to his standing. I think for my own, as I said before, I think the movie, as far as special effects and the way the movie's put together and the casting, is a solid 5 and it's very enjoyable. But if I am going to compare it to the book, I'm probably looking at more at a 3 to 4.
Yes.
You know, so, but I do understand the choices of making it animation versus comic strip. I do understand that because the animation work would work better in a movie. Just kind of wish they kind of stuck more to the book because I would, you know, but then again, if they did, I think that the movie would just have everyone in tears by the end of it. So.
But the thing is, like, if you think in the story, in the book, it is a story about cartoons with all the cartoon characteristics and everything, but it's more like a dense crime story. Where in the movie, it's more like a cartoon movie with all the animations and all those jokes that they have to put when they, for example, they put an animation next to a human and all those jokes. And that's why I think they have to changed the story to not to make it so dark and a bit sad and make it more enjoyable rather than, because at the end of the book, the story is not happy story. It's a bit sad.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, well, this brings us to the end of the Literature License podcast. Our next book to screen will be Where the Wild Things Are by Mor Sadek, and the film Where the Wild Things Are, which was directed by Spike Jonze. And of course, we'll be continuing on with our regular broadcasting, which we will be covering. Sorry, getting my notes up here. Batman, which will be the covering the episode Time Out of Joint, Catwalk, Bane, and Baby Doll. And of course, two for one families will be carrying on our animation with live action with our Dark Family's choices of Bedknobs and Broomsticks from 1971 and Enchanted for 2007. And our anthologies hosted by Joe Randazzo will be and Dr. Terror's House of Horrors and The Torture Garden. House of Horrors is from 1965 and Torture Garden from 1967. And of course, Doctor Who will be back, and they'll be covering The Savages and the War Machines. But they'll also be covering, due to illnesses, the storylines of The Celestial Toymaker and The Gunfighters. And of course, because it's Easter, there will be a special Easter production from the Doctor Who lot, which is done by Craig Johnson and Marius Akelos and Ramona Stengner. And they'll be doing the Doctor Who movie, which was starring Peter Cushing. And of course, we'll be back to our remake with Peach Dragon from 1977 and the remake from 2016 of Peach Dragon starring Robert Redford. So it's good night for myself. Good night, Leandro.
Good night.
And we'll see you next week for Batman.
You had a plenty money, 1922. You let other women make a fool of you. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. You're sitting down wondering what it's all about. You ain't got no money, they will put you out. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. If you had prepared 20 years ago, you wouldn't be a wanderer now from door to door. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Get out of here and get me some money too. Why don't you do right like some other men do?